In the season of Santa, there are two kinds of people. The naughty and the nice.
I've got $50 for the first elf that brings me Santa Claus.
Hulk Hogan is Blake Thorne, and he's definitely been naughty. To make his getaway, he's going to make a mockery of the world's most beloved hero.
Do you have a minute?
Fox me, you little brat.
That's him.
But sometimes, the only way you can feel the spirit of Christmas...
Where'd he go?
...is to be hit over the head with it.
Santa!
What? It's showtime.
Now, this confused bad boy is Santa, like you've never seen him before. A bearded basher of bad guys.
Yeah!
A hero with a silly hat. A Robin Hood in red.
Santa! Yeah!
Who were those guys anyway?
Oh, they work for Mr. Frost.
He's been clearing out the whole neighborhood, and no one knows why.
And he's got 3 days to foil a band of evil scientists.
Assemble the team. We're taking the orphanage.
Wait till Santa hears about this. He'll kick your butt to New Year's.
Santa, you slay me.
Hulk Hogan is Santa with an attitude.
Keep the milk and cookies warm.
Santa with some friends. Santa with a mission.
How are we supposed to get over this?
And most of all, he's Santa with muscles.
They can't start Christmas without me. Can they?
There have been many Santas.
You're not Santa. You're fed.
But there's only one named Hulk.
Well, all you had to do was knock.
Santa with muscles.
You want him? We got him. Movies for guys who like movies. Coming up next, only on TBS.
Welcome back to a special episode of the New Blood Rising podcast. Specifically, it's movies for guys who like movies. It's been eagerly anticipated. I only wish we were back with maybe a better movie. But here we are. It's Christmas time. It's the holiday season. So guess what? We need to do a Christmas movie. And out of the billion Christmas movies, guess what? Guess which one we're doing? It's Santa with Muscles, 1995's vehicle for Hulk Hogan. I'm William Rankin, joined by... Oh, what's up? How are you?
I'm all good. I'm great. This movie didn't kill me. I'm doing well.
And Charlie's here as well. How are you, sir?
Filled with a festive spirit.
Let's just get right into
Charlie's
this.
Charlie's here as well.
This was... All right, so Jason texted me this idea. And now... When he texted that, you know, hey, what if we do a movies for guys who like movies first with Santa with Muscles? I was like, all right, cool. Sounds like fun. I had no idea what this movie was.
Why is Charlie so angry at me with his text? What the fuck? We're doing Santa with Muscles? No.
You should have directed that at me, not at him.
Jason, yeah, no, yeah, so I let's start with it. Why did you pick this? Like, why?
Because thematically, our season is Sting to Hogan, and it's a Christmas movie, it's Christmas time, and it's a Christmas movie of Hulk Hogan. I had never seen it. I'd never seen this one. Years and years ago, my cousin got, like, a combo DVD set. They had, like, Mr. Nanny and Santa with Muscles, and it was just like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
It's pretty bad. When Mr. Nanny is far and away the better film.
Yeah. Someone hated him and put and sent him this. Like, he hit their truck or something, and they put this in instead of a note. This is what they put in the windshield wiper.
Merry Christmas.
So, and it was just like, so I knew it existed. I didn't know it was this bad. And right off the bat, from the bottom of my heart to both of you, I'm very sorry.
That's not good enough.
Well, if you would stop interrupting me, I mean, William, I know you're busy. You have a family. You have children. I took 90 minutes away from that for this. Charlie, you don't have life, I don't care, but you really
you got a bastard. Strong... You don't know what's going on.
You got a strong opinion about movies, and I've heard you suffer through good movies in the theater audibly, so I'm pretty sure your neighbors thought
what
you were
good
getting...
movie was that?
the best blowjob ever. But at the same token, this is what you get when y'all go to see Guns N' Roses without me. You watch it with...
Man, this is a long con. You've been playing, like, you count a Monte Cristo this thing. You're just sitting there in the cell with Richard Harris, and you're just like, man, I got a plan. In a few years, this is what we're going to do. It's going to be Christmas time.
I wrote, yeah, I carved it out right here on my bedpost. I was like, revenge. And I'll wait. I'm like, ooh, a couple years about Hogan at Christmas.
So let's set the stage for it here. It's 1996. This gets released. You know what? I'm not. What's the exact release date? Because I wouldn't see if they actually released it around Christmas time. Just to see. I'm curious if they did. But anyway, while I'm looking that up here. All right. Anyway, so. Wait, is it there? Oh, yeah. November 8, 96. Well, they at least tried. They tried to make some money on this.
If this was released in November, was he filming it right during the turn to NWO?
So that's one thing I wanted to bring up. Like, I think maybe that. I'm not going to say like that cripples the business for this movie because if you watch it.
That's what killed the movie. That's what did it.
But it probably doesn't.
If only he'd been a face.
But it probably didn't help that this happened to be the time when he became like the most villainous person in professional wrestling at this point. I'm sure it didn't help. But yeah, that's something I thought was fascinating. It was like this is one of the probably the last like Hulk Hogan face things that happened for a few years and stuff. But we said director John Murlowski. You know, I've looked at his. I've looked at his IMDb. It's nothing spectacular. A few Victoria Pratt movies. Those are probably a little dirty. But, I mean, you know, other than that, I mean, nothing spectacular with it. This movie's got a fascinating cast. It's a nexus of people coming up, people on the way out.
Way up, way down.
I mean, obviously we've got Hulk Hogan, which, my God, how far we've fallen. Suburban Commando was a real movie, like in theaters. You can say about it what you will, but it was marketed as a pretty substantial, like, you know, comedy back in when it was released. Charlie, you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a good movie. So there's that.
And then you've also got Along for the Ride. You've got... Wow, Star Trek's Robin Curtis, Lieutenant Savick, is back as a frumpy mom.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, just poor thing. There's no Pon Farr coming for her, all right? It's not happening. Poor thing. I mean, she also just looks like she is forcing herself to have chemistry with Hulk Hogan. Feels so bad.
I think she retired right after this movie. I think she called it a career. Like Will, you said it to me a couple days ago. How do you go from Joan Severance? You know, like anytime they try to mash up Hulk Hogan with a female lead, it never works. He doesn't have chemistry with any of the female leads he was ever in a film with, ever.
Clint Howard as an awful cop, the worst deputy in the world. It's great. Then Mila Kunis. A young Mila Kunis. How about it?
I just realized that my autocorrect made it Mika Kunis.
You have notes? Oh, my God.
I did.
I have a ton of notes. I really do.
Yeah. I have 29 notes. Cool. Yeah.
This is a great That 70s Show precursor because yes, Don is dead. Don Stark is also here.
Oh, God.
And boy, is he giving a performance. Jesus.
We've also got Garrett Morris from SNL.
Yeah.
Wow. He's really, he's hamming SNL it up.
Here's my thing. Okay, so you're going to cast a movie where Hulk Hogan is going to be a Santa Claus figure. So who possibly could play the villain? Ed Begley Jr. Oh,
man.
I'm just as God made me, sir.
Who, by the way, like, how, isn't it awesome? Ed Begley Jr. has FaceTime in 1995. Like, his
yes.
idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what's the plot of this movie? I'm actually generally asking. I'm just kidding. The plot of this movie is I guess Hulk Hogan is Blake Thorne or Blake Bukowski, John, whatever his name is, Krakowski, Thornkowski, whatever his real name is.
I think it's Blake Thorne.
No, no, his birth name in the movie.
Must have had a seizure at that point.
Because Garrett Morris, like, all of a sudden is like, guess what? I've got more exposition. This is your real name. Right. That's one of the moments where it's...
You forgot to mention executive producer.
Oh, right.
Got to mention that.
Right. The Wolf of Wall Street himself. Wow. That's unbelievable.
And what was the joke? The movie cost $20 million. He took $40.
That's the...
And this movie was also co-written by Jonathan Bond, you know, water slide attendant from Bill and Ted. I looked up on, I was like, holy really? Crap.
Well done, Someone Jason. With Bill and
Ted? The guy who says, buddy, you're holding up the line to Napoleon?
Wow. I wasn't trying to be like deep on it. I was just like, holy
that
shit.
That's good.
One of the writers says Bill and Ted. I was like, oh my God, what happened? Like, how did you write Bill and Ted? No, you just get a line.
So they went from, hey, can we get William Goldman? No. You can get the guy from Bill and Ted who says, Napoleon, you're holding up the line. All right, well, fuck it. We tried. Hulk Hogan's this billionaire, Terry Thorne, who apparently likes to...
Terry Thorne?
Oh, is that his name?
Terry Hulk Thorne.
Blake Thorne. Terry Thorne. That's actually
Terry
Russell.
Terry Thorne.
Terry Thorne is actually the name of Russell Crowe in Proof of Life. Sorry.
No. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Actually,
now I want to see fucking Russell Crowe's Santa with muscles.
Hold on. He
beats the shit out of everything.
I need to go. I texted Charlie the best plot summary of this movie ever. I got to find it because that's what I need to read. That is an incredible plot summary. Using vocabulary that this movie couldn't even try to really use. Here we go. I love it. It's right off of Rotten Tomatoes. Like I'm some kind of... Oh, it didn't even work. Rotten Tomatoes apparently is taking it down. I'm just kidding. I'll find it here in a second.
The whole movie. Never happened.
It never happened. Don't tell me it didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen.
But anyway, Hogan's this billionaire who apparently is just the worst human being in this town. Maybe one of the only human beings in the town because this town has only people at the mall and nowhere else. But... He is hawking, of course, a can of steroid cereal and other crap, and he
Santa with steroids.
There is a great joke. I will give him the credit. There's a really good pun because the name of like his weight gain powder is like the Blake Thorne Whey, and it's like spread like whey for. I was like, all right, that's pretty funny. That's about it.
Here it is. Penurious but muscle-bound Blake Thorne, famed wrestler turned actor Hulk Hogan, has made a vast fortune marketing health food and health supplements. He once was a nice fellow. We have no evidence of that in this movie. But as his wealth increases, he becomes increasingly self-centered and decadent. One day, he gets in a great paint gun fight that goes too far. Blake escapes the cops by running into a shopping mall, quickly donning a Santa suit and pretending to be Saint Nick. A head injury causes Blake to suffer amnesia, and an opportunistic elf decides to convince Blake that he is indeed Santa. This leads Santa to help save an orphanage filled with adorable Muppets from the machinations of a greedy, insane doctor. That is Santa with muscles.
Jesus Christ.
I wonder who wrote that.
The first of all, like the paint gun, weren't they like in the car, like on the way to the paint gun place? And then the Clint Howard, you know, had a motorcycle hit his car and that's why he got chased.
It's a capture of the flag game that never happens.
Yeah. Cause Hulk shoots Captain right from the get-go and leaves.
Yeah, in this world where you can shoot someone point blank range with a paintball gun, and the only thing the guy can muster up to say is, "Hey, you stained my shirt." Like, That hurts like a motherfucker. And it just, not in this movie. Nope.
The opening titles alone, I was looking at them and I was like, this is the worst. And like, this is stuff like I try to pay attention to when I'm doing stuff as titles are very important on screen. You have this red right
that
on top.
That red font?
Terrible.
It looks like it's from a different movie.
It does.
I feel like I'm going to watch a horror movie.
Yes, yeah. It does.
So it's really strange.
How legendary is Hogan's hairpiece? Is it like Burt Reynolds, Shatner good? Or what do you think?
It took me like an hour to realize he wasn't bald. And I was like, wait a minute. No. And it's just, you know, I'm looking at him like, that looks really good. It gives the best performance in the movie.
And he looks so different. He's so tiny. And he's shaved off like 2/3 of his mustache, too. So it doesn't look like Hulk Hogan.
It's a little strange.
This fight at the beginning that he apparently stages regularly with his staff to where, like, they just ambush him in his fatigues that he wears just casually around the house, and they just start fighting. My favorite is when he no-sells a kick to the face, and I was waiting for him to point at him and wag his finger. That didn't happen.
T-1000?
No, like how he hulks up. Like, when somebody punches him, and he's like, you!
Oh. That.
Charlie, I wrote for you. Hulk Hogan does his best acting.
About his, Hulk Hogan's.
What's that? Go ahead.
Hulk Hogan's rules. he has these rules, and I find it fascinating that it took him 386 of these things to get to never mix business with pleasure.
And it was like so big deal. He was like, "Oh, write that down." So,
yeah, write that down. Like he just thought of it. And it took 386 rules to even think of that.
Who's that guy who's his head server, too? That guy's been around the block a few times.
Oh, dude, that's the guy that Robin Williams replaces in Mrs. Doubtfire for the kids show. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
he's good.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Not here, but he's good.
Charlie, I wrote this for you. I said, I think Hulk Hogan does his best acting with a do-rag on. And then I wrote, no, he doesn't.
No.
It feels like at one point, he's like, yo, brother, I need to get this, need to put this on at one point. I gotta push these on the market. I gotta push my do-rag on the market.
It's just so weird, because it's, like, this is a very strange character. Like, it's weird to see Hogan acting like this. You know, because, like, we haven't talked about it, but he's very uppity, very cheery, like, he speaks in a completely different voice register in these opening 10 minutes. And that plot summary you came up with, that almost makes it sound like he gets Scrooged. And it doesn't quite happen like that. And he's very unlikable, like, the entire way through.
Yes. Yeah. And go ahead, Jason. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's the thing is, like, this. I was watching this going, okay, wait, he's the good guy? Because it's the complete disregard for the law. Like, he just starts shooting a paintball at a cop during a car chase. And he's just like, I'll lose him here. Like, this is. Are we supposed to assume that he's so rich he feels above the law, or what's the deal?
I'm not positive, Jason, but I'm going to assume that cops hate Santa because one of them shoots the Santa sign for whatever reason. It's just like, fuck you, Santa.
Yeah, Hogan, he remembers. He goes, we'll hide in this town. I grew up here. There's lots of places to hide. And then he remembers growing up in that town. But spoiler alert, he doesn't remember growing up in the orphanage.
Yeah, that felt like a 11 o'clock rewrite. When that moment finally comes in.
It really does. You're right. Because that's like, there's
and
no
now
hint.
There's this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's no hint at all. So we get introduced to this B story relatively early, and it takes me at least 45 minutes to figure out what the fuck's going on with Ed Begley Jr., with why they've got this guy upside down, you know, and I guess they're torturing him. it's like, okay, I can't wait until I understand why these two stories are going to connect. And it feels like it's from a completely different movie.
Yeah. And it's interjected, like, Will, and when you put together a movie and you're putting together a story, would you stall at the kind of intro segment and sequence to your character that's going to set up the plot for the rest of the movie, where he's running from the police in the mall? Would you suddenly stop doing that to do like an 8-minute introductory sequence to the villain and all of his henchmen, and then go back to wrap up and start the whole thing? Because it was kind of jarring.
Yeah, it's the way they sequence this out is just, because I was trying to be conscious of time, mostly because I was just wanting it to end mercifully as quickly as possible. But yeah, like, the timing on everything is just so bizarre. I feel like at the 45-minute mark, we get to the orphanage finally. And it's like, brother, man, it feels like we needed to get here a lot sooner. This feels like the Mallrats scenario where they talk about in the first screening of Mallrats, or the first cut of it, took 30 minutes to get to the mall, and they're like, a movie called Mallrats needs to get...
Yeah.
And the same thing. This movie's called Santa with Muscles. It takes him, like, well over a half hour, it seems like, just to get to the point where he's Santa with muscles, which is hysterical. That, like, oh, it's Santa just beating up people. Man, love this Santa. Love that Santa.
Love it. Oh, do you also love how they completely abandon their job at the mall?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
They just leave. Yeah. They never go back.
Because I wanted to see more of that manager. Like, who's that mall manager? What's going on there?
Yeah, that's what's gonna. She's
Bob Chapaska.
Then they also never define clearly how powerful of a human being he is, because he he holds that ice cream truck with a chain that's full of motion, like barreling down the street, and he stops it. Yet skinny Dr. Creepy Rapazoid guy is able to hold him down with a plastic candy cane, and an animatronic Santa Claus knocks him off the roof in its normal motion.
Oh my God. It's so ridiculous. Like, he has a very similar scene with a car in Suburban Commando, and it's so much better in Suburban Commando. Like, because it shows how, A, how strong he is, and B, it's actually funny. You know, like, it's like this movie does that same kind of scene, just completely wrong. And I will say, since you mentioned that ice cream truck, I was hopeful for a second, and this is a deep cut, but I was really hoping Clint Howard was driving that ice cream truck.
Oh, there we go.
Because that's a better movie, and that movie sucks. But I was like, oh man, if the villain turns out to be Clint Howard driving an ice cream truck, oh, I am so in. No. And let's talk about these villains for a second. Well, I told you about this. I hate this trope. It's something I don't miss from 90s movies. Almost every 90s kids movie had to have these Bulk and Skull type side villains where they were just idiots and it didn't make any sense. And it didn't matter what their job was. Like these guys are like scientists and they are just as dumb, if not dumber, than the three villains from Three Ninjas, who were the pizza delivery guys or whatever the fuck they were. Yeah, it's just so annoying that they have to constantly shoehorn these guys in, and they way overact. One of them is that bald guy with the glasses who I've seen in so many things, but I don't care enough to look up his name. But that guy that I think Jason pointed out with the long stringy hair, he might give the worst performance in the movie. He is so bad. I hate him in this movie.
I'm astounded. And, there is such a hierarchy of villains.
Yes.
You've got. All right, I'm looking up that guy's name. Who was it? It's Dr. Blight. That guy sucks. That guy's the worst. Even his IMDb picture makes me just dislike him more. He's terrible.
Yeah, it's bad. So that's the thing. Are we supposed to be afraid of him? Because he comes off super rapey towards Lieutenant Savick.
Oh, yeah.
But kids are scared of him, but he's kind of inept. I don't get it.
Yeah. There came a point in these movies where they couldn't make these villains too scary. Like, you wanted, like, a great scary villain from, like, a 90s kids movie? This is the fucking villain from Beethoven. That guy is terrifying. And it's a vet. And it's like, that's how you do it. But no, like, they have to make it too cartoony. Like, I hate to bring up Three Ninjas again because they just did this in every single one of those fucking things, even the one that Hogan was in. But the villains would eventually, like, the movies would morph into this thing where anytime the villain got hit with anything or did, like, a weird quick move, the Foley artist would throw in this goofy cartoon sound effect just so that the kids would feel okay, that they wouldn't be too scared.
And they'd all end up getting kicked in the balls. Every one of them gets kicked in the
balls. Always get kicked in the balls. Always.
Charlie, you nailed on the Foley artist, because I have multiple notes where I'm like, do they want us to know they're using ADR? Because there's clearly a lot of things where it's like, we need to re-record that later. We need to get him in the booth.
It's awful. So it's so bad. The ice cream truck actually attempts murder. Tries to kill Garrett Morris.
Garrett Morris. And oh my god, that scene. Because he immediately.
Let's just go back inside.
I like Garrett Morris's, like, line. He, like, says to Hogan, he's like, "What, man, you're crazy. What were you thinking?" I go, "Motherfucker, what were you thinking, Dr. Malcolm? And the T-Rex coming at you? Like, what were you thinking? What were you going to do? They were about to run you over. You had no plan, Garrett. Go back inside and wait on this subplot for later." Jesus Christ.
And that's what they do. They don't call the cops. They don't do anything. They just go back inside and just talk. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Even if the attempted murder didn't happen, there's still vandalism because they've ripped the statue apart. And how heavy is this head?
Oh my
god.
It's
like someone's just able to lob it through the window and then they go pick it up. But it's thing. But with going back with the ADR, Hogan is like two different people, because at the beginning entrance where he's all Blake, he's super talky, he's super upbeat, he's super loud. But once and he gets the beard on, he becomes Santa with mumbles. Like, I can barely hear it. And I get he's quasi confused, but even when he gets and the supposed to be funny, but literally just looks like something that would become a huge viral video sensation, where he's getting interviewed by the lady and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And he's like making up all this stuff and trying to read Don Stark's stuff, and he can't do it. She goes, "How'd you get so strong?" He says, "Oh, I rode the reindeer." "Oh, how'd you get so strong?" "I ate a lot of reindeer meat."
Like, that actually cracked me up.
I cracked up for the wrong reason.
That was the one, like, genuine reaction I had to the movie. It was positive. I was like, "Oh shit!" That was pretty good.
There's so many jumps as far as plot. It's like, okay, he's in the mall. Those dudes try to steal that money. That little girl screams Santa, and he just feels compelled to go help instead of just being like, "What the fuck is going on?" If there was some sort of supernatural thing where this was Santa answering the little girl's letter using this guy, great. That would have wrapped up a lot. But he really just feels like he is so out of it and just kind of goes with the flow. But what flow?
Right.
Yeah.
Couple of quotes here that I thought were funny. "Fax me, you little brat." And I wrote, "Hogan does it for the fans."
I actually had a moment where I was like, "Oh, there's the real Hulk Hogan." Yeah, and just like,
oh, I know you're talking about
a little bit there.
Yeah. But the other one, I forget if he was inside an elevator shaft or wherever, and I was like, "Come out to the North Pole, we'll have a few laughs."
Yeah, that's right. Well, they do make a diehard joke, because the cops are like, "Oh, do you think he went in the air ducts? Did you see the size of that guy?" Yeah, like, he couldn't fit in the air ducts. And I'm right. Like, "Oh, I just want to watch Die Hard. I want to watch Die Hard 5. Like, it just,
oh god,
give me anything. Hogan has one line that just fucking killed me. "Keep the milk and cookies warm." And I'm like, "The cookies, sure, but
the milk."
I don't know, Mrs. Gilmore. Yeah, like, why do you want warm milk? Like, it just seemed a little odd. I hate this little red-haired '90s douchebag kid that's in the orphanage. He's been in so many things. I think he was even in Kindergarten Cop. But they try to give him this little arc, like he's going to be the one kid who, you know, is disillusioned and wants to run away, but he's inspired and he wants to help out. It's just like, dude, this kid sucks. Like, I just want to know, like, his story for how he got into all these movies back then. And I think he's still working.
Yeah, his IMDb is crazy. It's a ton of material. The kid, like, I mean, from when he was this age, and even years beforehand doing Kindergarten Cop, the guy's done a ton of movies.
He's like a low-rent Scott Farkas, you know? but he just hung on. He just wouldn't go away. Oh, God. I will say this, though. Okay, so let's talk about this for a second, because I cracked up. I'm not going to lie. So Don Stark's character is just an idiot, like just a big buffoon and just acting all cartoonish, and it's awful. And he notices he needs to get Hulk Hogan's fingerprint so that he can access his ATM account and or whatever, his bank account. And he notices that Hogan touches the glass and leaves his fingerprint on it. And what starts playing? Ric Flair's music.
Yeah.
And I got really excited. I was like, oh my God, if Ric Flair walked in right now, like, he would just save this movie. Oh God. But
Charlie, I was actually hoping his plan was, I'm just going to chop his hand off and go to the ATM.
Yeah. Because let's talk about this. Okay. I'm like, okay, so what's his plan here? Is he going to take like a thing of scotch tape and like stick it on the glass and then like, is that what he's going to do? No, he's going to take just the literal glass and put it, like, because I'm thinking, if I tried to do this, I probably wouldn't be able to get it to work. And I'm like, so what's he going to do? And he's going to do something that absolutely will never fucking work except in the movies. You know, it's just like, I'll just put the glass on the fingerprint reader and that ought to do it. But then it's like, oh, we need the left thumbprint or whatever. And he just kind of does the real, like, Three Stooges reaction, like, no! And I'm like, oh my God. Like, just awful 90s kids movie acting.
Yep.
Just over the top, just ridiculous, and completely unrealistic. And this guy's not bad, because I've seen that 70s show. This guy isn't bad, but he's bad.
Ugh. He has a line with Mila Kunis where he says, or she says to him, keep your pants on. I was like, that's just creepy. I don't want to see.
No!
I don't want that. Dr. Bitch or whatever her name is. I don't. Whoever the evil woman villain is, it Dr. Shock, Watt, whatever.
Dr. Shock, chick? Yeah.
She says to him, you wouldn't hit a woman, would you? And I wrote, no, but if you're married to my best friend, I might sleep with you on tape.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And the thing is that,
Merry
that she is, she's
Merry Christmas. Hit her with the muscles.
Pours water on her, and she is electrocuted. But everyone, like the creepy rape doctor is locked in the freezer inside a church or whatever this is that collapses upon itself, and yet he's A-okay except he's a little frozen. When it's all said and done, this world is insane. When the kid, like you were talking about, low rent, whatever his name is, as you put it, just disappears from the group when they're like after the head comes through the window, and they're like, where does he go? Hulk Hogan just, it cuts to his headphones laying in the grass. I know where he went. How do you know? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of how does Hulk Hogan know that? That the thing that don't really get an answer. Because I want to say it happens twice. There's two points in this movie where another movie just showed up, and one of them, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like one of them is we've already talked about it. What was it? It's
Hulk Hogan's an orphan from the orphanage.
Hulk Hogan's an orphan. Okay. Well, before that, there's this underground, like Dr. Evil lair. Like right underneath the orphanage / church.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, the villains are just trying to get a hold of the orphanage because there's valuable crystals.
Yeah.
We find this out in about an hour into the movie. And Hogan, I don't think they ever explained it. Hogan knows the combination to get into the door, but he knows the last number, but he doesn't remember why. Is this because he was an orphan? And he just figured it out back when he was a kid?
Yeah, I guess, because they show his initials on the door, so apparently
really
he was hanging out a lot there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it goes to, the bad guy was your best friend, and neither of you remember.
It's very simple. Like, this is the basic idea of this movie is, it's a Save the Rec Center movie. And that should have been all it was. No, it's a Save the Rec Center movie, but instead of it being like, oh, we're going to demolish it and build like condominiums and shit like they usually do. No, we're going to harvest crystals. That like it's so out of left field.
And Charlie, not just that, the Rec Center goes nuclear and it just goes up and
oh man,
I was thinking Gozer was going to come. Yeah, or that. Perfect.
Yes. Yeah, it just the house eats itself. And here's another thing. Is it an orphanage or is it a church or is it both? Because the one thing we haven't talked about is that annoying little girl who's a voiceover starts the movie.
Dear Santa,
like she's as soon as she started talking, I'm like, oh, here we fucking go. And then because it all like she's a cute little girl, it's fine, but it all leads to this bullshit scene in the church where Hogan's like, how's it going? You know, and
brother.
Brother. And he sits down, and he's just choosing not to wear a beard now because he outsmarted the child. Oh, Mrs. Claus said makes her itch when I go down on her or whatever.
Mrs. Claus said the tickles, so I only wear.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
And she just went, oh, yeah, we got Cinemax.
So he's allowed to walk around without the beard because the kid's an idiot. She just buys it. So she starts like singing, and Hogan, like, you're just praying that Hogan doesn't know the song, but he knows the song. And Hulk Hogan starts singing with her, and this was the exact moment I wanted to turn the gun on myself because Hogan is trying to keep up with this girl, and this little girl, like, she does okay with the song, but Hogan is just, it reminds me of a really bad version of when Jack Palance and Billy Crystal did this in City Slickers. Yeah. It's just like trying to like, oh, they found something to connect with, but it's like Hogan's trying to be endearing and it's just not working.
That girl I wrote Charlie, I forget what it's whatever action scene she's in. I was right. Or maybe it's her, it maybe just be her reactions. I wrote, she's overselling more than Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam.
She is like, I think she's playing up that voice.
Yeah.
Like that voice is too childish.
Dear Santa.
But it's super sad because she's sitting here. She goes, oh, I come in here and try to sing to the fairies. And like, what the fuck is going on? Right. And they show the windows and they flicker. And then they try to explain that the crystals underground make the windows flicker.
Unbelievable. And
she says this line.
What are we even talking about?
Yes. She says this line that makes it super sad where she's like, I like to come in here and sing because then I think my mommy is listening to me. You're an orphan. You ain't got a mommy.
Like, you don't have a mom.
Which, okay, let's also be real. This is like a 30s room church orphanage. There are four orphans. You don't even need
this. Well, They did say
I would hope I wouldn't get adopted if I was living in that place is too big.
Yes, that there was a that they couldn't get the they these are the three kids they couldn't get adopted because remember they said they're the leftovers and I was hoping like then we're gonna see like oh we're gonna see creepy ass shit kids. They're just normal kids. Mila Kunis is supposed to be super smart or something because she's always reading. So she
that's how you know strong woman.
Strong woman.
To go back to Charlie's point.
Come on, like, Jason, bite. Bite.
Charlie, to bring back a point that you were just talking about, another movie they tried to introduce at the beginning, she's like, oh, I don't believe in Santa. Like, it's going to be one of those movies
here we go.
You know? It's going to be one, and then it just goes away. It just instantly goes away.
It's just as predictable as any one of those movies where a kid has a problem with their father, and they just, instead of calling them dad, they call him John. And it's just as predictable. It's like, he'll be dead by the end of this thing. I just fucking know it.
Well, only if he coughs. He's got to cough in the first act to indicate he'll be dead by the third act.
Oh, my God. And it rips off some of these, like it has that Dickensian way about it with, like, oh, he's got to learn a lesson by being with the lessers, you know. And the way it starts with that little girl's voiceover, it is very reminiscent of the way It's a Wonderful Life starts. With all the people in Bedford Falls praying for George Bailey, and it just doesn't have the effect at all, no matter how cute that little girl's voice is.
All the different wrestlers praying for Hulk Hogan. Dear God, it's me.
That would be amazing.
And then you cut to Kevin Sullivan having a satanic ritual.
Oh, let's talk about another 90s trope that this movie just can't let go of. If the movie is interesting, just have a musical score that never fucking stops. It just plays. Someone hits play and it just goes. No one ever like fades the music out, fades it in. It just keeps fucking going until the fucking music is driven into your brain. Oh, I hate this.
Couple more technology things I thought were incredible. Jason, you'd love this. How does he have good a cell service in a tunnel in the 90s underground? That's awesome. Like,
because, man, he's basically junior. No. Don't you judge. No, the flip phones, that's right. Because that was... I was sitting there, like, thinking, like, this whole subplot of he gets his memory back and is taken away from the orphanage, and so he just sits there. He doesn't go help them. He just tries to call them. And how did they... Okay. They do the voice recording thing. You know what I'm talking about? Yes. Here, where it's another with technology, where they hack the phone line.
Hogan dials three numbers. There's still a dial tone. He starts talking to an operator, but we still hear the dial tone. And then he asks whoever is on the other line, but there isn't anybody, to connect him to the orphanage. So even he doesn't understand how a phone works, that you have to dial more than three numbers than to actually get apparently a human being. Because his thing is, like, and this leads right into the cross-connection thing that you're talking about, but it's just funny. It's like, you're talking to a dial tone. What are you doing? What happened?
Why I gotta dial the area code now? I just won't dial seven numbers. That's
So I talked about how they ripped off a couple of the Christmas movies ideas, which is, you know, that's typical. Like, you see enough of these movies, it's just bound to happen. But then, like, we briefly touched on it. They basically just decided to remake a classic scene from fucking Vertigo, like, where they're up in the bell tower, and the way that Hogan falls, like, what happened? Like the Santa arm, like, just kind of like brazenly touches him, and he just falls into this garbage truck where he sees one of his powders, and he makes some kind of meta comment, like, basically letting us know that he's back to his normal self. My God, it's just so convoluted. Like, they couldn't figure out how to get him out of that bell tower. And Jesus Christ, we haven't even mentioned that he got Brutus Beefcake a role in this.
Oh, yeah.
As a Japanese sous chef? What the fuck is he doing in this thing?
He's a scientist. Remember, all of Ed Begley Jr.'s guys are scientists. That's why they're carrying those long plastic rulers. Because they're all scientists.
That's what they carry. Oh, yeah. Hold on. They're carrying T-squares.
Yes.
And they're beating each other and strangling each other with T-squares. It's so weird.
And it just, that's where I want to go back to the hacking the phone line. Is, number one, were they just sitting there hoping to God Hogan would call? Why? I mean, it's cool, but all of them were involved. You have a plan where you are 95% of the way done because he's bought the entire rest of the neighborhood. So I don't understand how why he has to buy the rest of the neighborhood if the church is and the orphanage is the only one that has the vault in it. He's right there. So he sends everyone to hack the phone line, and they're hacking the phone line, but then it's sending that phone call to Ed Begley Jr.'s phone instead of someone just being right. I was like, what the fuck is this? And when did he tape that conversation with her? And why would Hulk Hogan suddenly go, now someone's like, thank you for saving our ass multiple times. You saved our token black guy's life at your first scene when you met him. Now get the fuck out of here. Well, it was such a forced turn in the story.
So Clint Howard decides to come back into this thing.
like how you say, like, Clint's like, I want more.
Look, I'm done with him. And then, like, an hour goes by, and I still have it. And he shows up, and I'm like, this is so ridiculous. Oh, but it gets so much better. Because the police have a goddamn rocket launcher.
Whoa, yeah.
That they fire.
Yeah.
Like, because I think Clint Howard's car is the one that gets hit.
And he ends up like driving the blown up police car with windshield wipers, like as a sight gag that are still going. And it's like, oh, that's funny. Yeah. And I love Clint Howard. Every time he came on, it was like, Solo, a Star Wars story, Clint Howard. You know? Like, just all the weird movies he's been able to pop up in, and then he shows up in this shit.
And is he the police captain? Because the other two police officers in this town seem to be pretty damn frightened of him.
I beat the fuck at him.
I mean, it's no surprise, when you look at the newspaper and it says crime is on the rise. Well, no shit. You got the worst police force in the history of mankind here. You've got Clint Howard leading.
Using rocket launchers.
Using rocket launchers on themselves, apparently.
And it's all this one gang. They call Ed Begley Jr.'s people a gang. They don't know where he is. His house is fucking huge, and there's air cans all over the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be a germaphobe or something.
So when they get back to the ground lair, like I because I was trying to figure out how this worked. Ed Begley Jr. is wearing this astronaut outfit, and yet no one else really is. Like, Hogan's down there, the kids are down there. What exactly is Ed Begley Jr. protecting himself from?
He's a germaphobe.
He's a germaphobe.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
That's it. The aerosol cans everywhere. The creepy rape scientist sprays, like, then before he comes in, says it's like it's been covered. There's the scene where he hands him the papers and he sprays the papers down. He says papers full of germs. He's a germaphobe.
Wow.
So there's one thing they established and you missed it.
Wow. I feel like I've given the movie a disservice.
It's like they set up one thing.
Well, then there's this weird, like, before that, there's another one wearing an astronaut suit, and Hogan, like, activates the gas.
That guy's dead.
And that guy's got to be dead, right? Like, and Hogan and the kids are like, ah! Like, they're just having a ball watching this guy basically just die.
Oh.
And I'm sitting, like, in my chair mortified, and just like... what's happening here?
See, I want to see that movie. I want to see Krampus with muscles. Where's Hogan? But he's just like joyfully killing people. It just to laugh along and go with it. That's actually a pretty good idea.
Like they were pointing and laughing, and it was just like a wonderful time. And I'm like, that guy's gonna have problems for the rest of his life if he makes it out of this.
If he makes it out,
because it's fart gas too.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's really bad. So, like, what is it? Hogan, like, adopts the kids, I guess?
Yeah. Bring it, Charlie.
And he adopts Garrett Morris.
Here comes.
Oh, yeah. This was the best. So, Hogan, like, adopts the kids, basically everybody, and brings them over to his mansion. The kids are having fun, and Stark is, like, in a chair, like, suntanning. Did he make the black guy mow the lawn?
Yep.
Garrett Morris is mowing the lawn.
But wait, I don't think that's not Hogan's mansion. It's Begley Jr.'s mansion that they take from him because of all the. Remember when he and the elf were sneaking through the yard? Yes, it does. But so it's not. So therefore, Hogan's not being racist. That's the new orphanage. And so it was Garrett Morris's job to take care of the orphanage.
Oh,
so
that's the new orphanage?
Yes, but also, where did these other orphans come from? I would feel kind of gypped if I was the last three kids left, and then like suddenly we get a new sweet ass house, and there's like 30 of us running around, and it looks like birthday party time all the time. No. But I love how they can see the prison. It's got a great view.
Oh my God! Yeah, they're within an earshot of the prison. Hogan's like, look at the prisoners picking up trash. You know,
we can hear them complaining.
Look, there's nails. Look at that jabroni.
Man, that was a quick sentencing. Like, it just... In you go.
Man.
Wow. Oh, but... So, the little girl... So, I can pick on her one more time. She has the last line of the movie. And I swear to God, she forgot it. They left it in. Because she looks through the telescope, gets down, looks around at everybody, then looks down, and then looks back up and delivers her final line.
She Clooney'd it.
With the head bobbing?
Clooney, you know, you look down, you look up, you look down, you look up, and you say your line. All solemn, and everyone thinks you're a good actor. She Clooney'd it.
Oh, yeah. It looked like, because right before she says it, it looks like just entered her mom. She has a look on her face like, oh, shit. And then she goes right into it.
Should we get another take? No, fuck it.
Go home. This movie. Oh, my God. Oh, well, we also, like, that third act reveal. Okay, so it turns out Hulk Hogan and Ed Begley Jr. were best friends, which is just the oddest pairing, when they were kids in the orphanage. And Hogan's like, what happened to you? You used to be nice. So strange.
Yeah, because then Ed Begley Jr. goes, you were off spending mommy and daddy's millions. They were orphans.
Right.
Was he adopted by a millionaire?
Must have been.
When some millionaire came to the shit-ass orphanage, went, I want that kid.
Hi, my name's Larry Thunderlips. I'd like to buy that kid. Or we adopt him. Whatever.
Happy holidays.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. I mean, I know not everywhere is snowing because clearly this is California, but can you make it at least seem like it was supposed to be Christmas time outside of the mall?
It's pretty bad. Like the Christmas spirit, it does not live within this movie. it's pretty vacant, actually. And Jesus. Hogan, I love how, like, Hogan is just so strange in this movie, like how he's compelled to go to the orphanage, like he's on a mission from God or something. Like, he sees one sign for an orphanage in that mall at the beginning of the movie. We got to go to the orphanage. And just why? Because the script says so.
If there would have been a real Santa that was using this to answer her, then that would have made the movie, I would say, because because at least there's a reason for this compelling thing. And it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe he's just going to start going doing good, only he decides to only do good at this one place.
I can't understand how Hulk Hogan, who's probably the most charismatic wrestler of all time, and how good he was in Suburban Commando, and how good he was like in Rocky III, even though it's a bit part, how he's just not very good in anything else, and how he's just basically like he's just white bread. Like, there's nothing interesting about him in all, in almost any of the other movies that he was in. Like, he wasn't able to carry over that charisma to hardly anything else. And why that was, I just don't know.
I think it's effort. Like, you look at some of these other, like, Steve Austin falls into the same category. He tried to carry over the persona, but he didn't really try to, like, grow or adapt with each movie to, like, act. You know what I mean? Like, be a character versus be stone cold as this person. And I feel like Hogan falls into the same thing. Like, Suburban Commando is crafted beautifully to where it works around Hulk Hogan's strengths. Not all movies are going to be written that way or made that way. And that's where it requires effort on the actor's part. The Rock has done a great job of trying to, like, a lot of times he is just the persona, you know, but he happens to have that level of effort where, like, it's convincing.
But it's a good one.
Yeah. It's convincing. Like,
it's a good one. It just makes me think that if you look at it from as a character, it's like Harry Belafonte can only play Hulk Hogan.
Right. Right. Exactly.
You know, like that's kind of how it feels. And it's like, and yeah, with Suburban Commando, like, script is pretty good. But it's also like the supporting cast, like, that really, they have a lot to do. Yeah. You know, like, they make it work. The movie just doesn't solely rest on Hulk Hogan. So that helps too. And even No Holds Barred to an extent in a so bad it's good way. But he's a wrestler in that. So it's not that much of a stretch. It's just, I just find it very, just almost like a missed opportunity. But Hogan just, he couldn't be served correctly in any of these movies. And the fact that, for me, at least, this isn't even his worst movie. And just, that's a real testament to just how many bad movies Hulk Hogan actually made.
Yeah. I think it's laziness. Like, I think a lot of wrestlers are lazy and they're just going to phone it in, thinking their persona in wrestling will carry over into just any movie. And that's just not the case. I mean, it just doesn't... There are some people who can be just a persona in every movie and it works. They are some of the best movie stars on the planet. They don't have to really do much of anything. They can just be themselves. The difference between Jack Reacher and Ethan Hunt is not much, really, in the end. But it's
not much.
It's a great... He's a fantastic persona that just finds a way to, like, maneuver with each movie and make it work. Where just some wrestlers don't. And we love Steve Austin, but god dang. Talk about some terrible... terrible movies. I mean
they're pretty bad. Yeah. They're worse than Hogan's.
Oh yeah.
Well, it could always be like Randy Orton and just have a scene where you're gonna cast Randy Orton just for him to go, I'll go to the papers.
that's what they call me, or what's the name of that movie? That's my name.
Yeah. Yes. You get like Ed Harris, it's like supposed to be like a kid being bullied by Randy Orton. I'll take this to the papers.
I'll RKO the papers.
Yeah.
Take a RKO the bully kid? No, he's just going to go to the papers. I don't get it.
Yeah.
And then there's the failed Triple H movies that they made it twice. One family comedy and one is supposed to be serious drama.
Well, that's right. It's the same movie, but one's R and one's PG. He's out of prison. Yeah. I saw The Chaperone. At least I've seen that one. Ugh. God.
Wow.
So, but to bring this back to this, I mean, on paper, you got the guy who was still, you know, riding, you know, he wasn't at this point, but he's the biggest wrestler to come along at this point playing Santa Claus. You would think that this would get some kind of budget, some kind of attention, a little bit of, no, it doesn't. It's almost like a canon film level.
Yeah.
Thrown together.
That's a good way to look at it. And you know, like, I don't think it's much of a stretch to see someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a role like this. Because, like, I keep thinking about Jingle All the Way and how that movie should be terrible. But I love that movie. And that's more boiled down to the performances and the script. But I could see Arnold doing a much better version of Santa with Muscles back then. I could see, like, this script passing him to his desk once, like, just a joke. You know, just like, oh, maybe Arnold will say yes. But no, he would never say yes.
No, that, man, they... that'd be brutal, man. Schwarzenegger would definitely
I can't imagine that this was written...
Yeah.
I can't imagine that this was written for Hulk Hogan, you know? Like this might have been... This might have gone through a couple of things before it finally was like, hey, let's make Hulk Hogan. Because I remember, like, those promos that Hogan did back in the 90s in WCW where he talked about how Ted Turner promised him movie deals and it's like, that's it. You know, it's like, you got Thunder in Paradise out of this, which is okay. It's not bad. But like every movie that he did around this time, and that's the thing too, Hogan did so many movies that I'm sure that we're all three not even aware of. Like, he's one series that had like three movies that came out in like the early 2000s, like Shadow Assault or whatever the hell. Like, Earl Weathers is in one of them.
And you're just Shadow Warriors.
That's it. Yeah. And it's
where, like, he's got a full, luxurious head of hair. He looks like Van Hammer.
Van Hogan.
But yeah, like, I could see this really doesn't look like it was written for him. But if you wind up getting, like, okay, well, we didn't get this person. If you get Hulk Hogan, rewrite it a little bit to be more him. Because it's either he's trying so hard to not be Hulk Hogan so that he can show his range.
Well, you know what he could do to help that? Shave the mustache completely. The fact that he kept his mustache in almost every single one of his movies, except for, I think, Three Ninjas, but that no. But that, like, that doesn't help. It's just like, I just look at him and I go, Hulk Hogan, you know, that's not an ex-Navy SEAL. That's not an alien warrior from outer space. You know, that's Hulk Hogan.
Who's an ex-Navy SEAL warrior from outer space, but, you know.
Oh, jeez.
Anything else you guys got? What else on this?
I say we rate it.
That's a good call. Oh,
just for shits and giggles. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I'll start. I give Santa with Muscles a 2.
That's exactly the rating I thought of, so I'll stick with 2 as well.
Yes, 2 across the board.
Wow. Cool.
So
cool.
What's it take? That being said, what's it take to get a 1?
Three Ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain.
Or Cops and Robbersons for me. That's another. I did give it a 1, maybe unceremoniously, but yes.
Not to say, I certainly don't think that that's a worse movie than this, but that's my opinion. No, Hogan, this is such a bad movie, but I'll be honest, it's one of the longer 90-minute movies I've come across recently. You know, it just feels like an eternity. But, you know, I was never, like, bored, I guess is the word. Like, I was really fascinated, like, watching this production and just how, like, at this point there had been, like, 90 years of movie making, and yet there was, to this day, there's still shit being made. And you're like, yeah, they still haven't figured it out, you know? There's a nostalgic quality to it, too. Cause I remember WCW promoting this a little bit. And I had, prior to this viewing, I had seen this movie a little bit on TBS, and I knew I didn't like it, but, you know, it was nice. It's nice to say that I've at least seen it, you know?
Well, that's that. Wow.
Merce. It's what that's the back of the box. It's nice to that's say I've at box. Least seen it.
Well, I've at least seen it, you know. I can cross it off the list.
This is notoriously one. Is it in the bottom, like, 250 on IMDb?
It was in the bottom, for a long time, it was in the bottom 100 on IMDb, which I helped contribute. I'm hoping it can get there again. But there's a lot of competition. If you've ever actually looked at the IMDb bottom 100, there is a lot of awful shit. And, like... I honestly don't think this isn't one of the worst movies I've ever seen, because I've seen so many, but it's still pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's that's for sure.
It's right.
It's
no Mac and me.
No, it's no Mac and me. And when you're competing with movies like The Hottie and The Naughty, and like Manos, The Hands of Fate, like, yeah, it's not going to come anywhere near that. Ugh. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Thanks for listening to Movies for Guys Who Like Movies as part of the New Blood Rising podcast. We will be back with Starcade 91, Battle Bowl, The Lethal Lottery, The Final Frontier, The Undiscovered Country, The Endgame, The Quickening.
Generations.
Endgame, there you go. Part 2. Judgment Day.
If you're traveling over the holiday, be safe on the roads, especially while you're listening to this. Don't careen off the road as we're getting into some of these diatribes about Hulk Hogan's acting.
That's right. Become so upset that we sat through this for you that you go, well, Charlie said he turned a gun on himself. I think I'm just going to go right to the 18-wheeler over there.
We're on Facebook, New Blood Rising Podcast, on Twitter at New Blood Pod. I'm at William Rankin 83.
I'm at the Jason Kiesler.
And I am at CM_Stabs.
We'll see you all again soon for Starcade 91.